Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 31. I'm Dan Tomlinson. I'm joined, as always, by Rich Harrison, a.k.a. Pommy Rich. How are you doing, Paul?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. And you?
Yeah, spot on, thank you. All good here. Just enjoying the off-season, really. It's quite refreshing after, you know, ranting every week.
Yes, although we've still probably got stuff to rant about. I saw the England squad.
Yeah, that's going to open a right kind of lens later in the show, but... As always, we'll start with Hull FC, and I suppose we've been there and done that this year. We've criticised, we've been complimentary, you know, we've thrown the book at them in some respects, and also we've sung the praises when it's been warranted. And it's funny because I did an article for the Cream this weekend, and looking back on the full season, I was thinking I can't make all 5 points a rant because we haven't been ranting for the full year. And you said it, up until June, our podcasts were 95% positive because our season up until the end of the June was absolutely satisfactory at worst, and then obviously it all fell by the wayside after that, wasn't it?
Up until the end of June, the only teams we'd lost to were Saints and Catalans and Wigan.
That's respectable. You can sort of live with that.
And we'd drawn with Warrington.
Yeah, exactly. We drew with Warrington. And that's the thing, because it was the manner of those defeats, and you're thinking, St. Helens in the league, beaten by a three-time back-to-back champion side, can live with that. The cup game, we pushed them all the way. If that passed the cow off sticks, who knows? Could have been going to Wembley.
Yeah.
Never know,
probably
do you?
Would have won it.
And Catalans, nobody really knew at the time what they were going to become, but that was the first night that fans, you know, came back into attendance. And and they just did a number on us. It happens, doesn't it? They had a big forward pack and they got on top of us. And yeah, just what it was, but we were competitive in every game.
And then 6 days later, we go to Headingley and beat Leeds. Up until the end of June, we were still looking to be probably a top four, top five side, if not better. Because at the end of June, we were staring down the barrel of games against Salford, Lee, Rovers twice, Huddersfield. You know, we probably wouldn't have had another team to really test us until we came up against Leeds at the end of July. You know, so we'd have probably had 3 or 4 weeks where you'd think that we'd get, you know, 6, 8, 10 points. And it didn't happen like that because we had games postponed. Well, and we just fell apart.
That's the reality of it. And people sort of think, oh, that's just excuses and the COVID thing. And also the players that we had out at the time, the players that contracted COVID and then were out for a month. But it is a valid excuse. It doesn't excuse what happened in those final 9, 10 weeks, don't get me wrong. But it is a factor in Hull FC season. And that unfortunately, was the turning point.
It's not an excuse, it's an explanation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good analogy of it, and that's what it is. It's an explanation, but yeah, as I say, when we came back at Huddersfield after 4 weeks, ironically again, you know, leaking 40 points, and then, you know, that contributed to 9 losses in 10. You know, 3 more of those were conceded 40 or more points. You know, they were frustrating games. Leeds at Magic, Leeds at home, Cass at home, Wigan at home, getting nilled. It just, yeah, it wasn't good enough, and that's where it goes from, you know, as I say, explaining things to just saying, you know what, front up, that's not good enough. And that's obviously where we questioned attitudes and the same problems that have been tarnishing Hull FC for years now. And it's a dangerous road. It really is. And it's so frustrating as well, because you see what could happen at the start of the year compared to what, you know, how the year finished.
And
it's two different Hull FCs, isn't it? It's obviously the good, the bad and the ugly, and the sublime and the ridiculous. And to be honest, as long as I can remember watching Hull, it's never been any different.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right. You know, that's what we've been saying ever since we started doing this podcast and ever since I started writing for Up the Cream, is that what we need is sustained excellence. You know, and you get a season of good, or half a season of good, and then you get half a season of bad, or, you know, 3 seasons of bad. You know, your top teams, your absolute cream teams, your St. Helens, arguably your Wigans, they don't have those ups and downs. They don't have those peaks and troughs. They're consistently in the top two, top three, top four. And that's what we've got to aim for. And a club our size, with our fan base, you know, we demand it. And we should be getting it.
Absolutely. And it's not like we're saying, oh, we should be winning this, we should be winning that. Like we said at the start, if we were a playoff side this year and won a playoff game, I would have been happy with that, because I understand the situation we're in. It's the same next year. That's sustained... I won't say that's sustained excellence, but it's setting the bar, isn't it? You've got to be a player. When you're a left wing, you're spending this and you're spending that, and you've got this player and you've got this player. You've got to be in the top six as a bare minimum every year, and then do it bang, 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 bang. Not go finish third a couple of times and win the Challenge Cup and then go back to being a bottom four side again. That's not good enough.
Exactly. Well, you know, last year, right, And I know it was a COVID-affected season, and we had the thing with Radford, and then we had Lasty in charge and all the rest of it, right? Last year's team did better than this year's. And that baffles me. You know, I know that we got into the playoffs because really they changed the rules last year, didn't they? We actually got in via that. But we were 80 minutes away from Old Trafford last year. And this year we didn't even qualify. Now, when you look at that Hull side for the first 6-8 weeks of the season, you would have thought, we have got to eclipse what we did last year. You know, you'd have just looked at them and said, we will eclipse what we did last year. We're a better team. We're more balanced. The squad's better. We're playing for each other. We've got a bunch of players that seem to be buying into what the coach wants. You wouldn't have thought that we would have died off so comprehensively at the end of the season compared to last year. But as it is, we're looking at it now and we're going, well, we've gone backwards from last year. And last year was catastrophic. You know, who else sacks a coach on the pitch, live on TV? You know? And this year was worse. And I don't think it's the coach's issue. You know, we've gone chapter and verse about underperforming players and everything, but it's a really sad reality that you look at it in the cold light of day, and, you know, in years to come, when people are writing books on Hull and when historians look back at this and when we all look back at it with rose-coloured, you know, specs like we always do for our own team, you're going to look at it and in black and white, it will state that the 2021 season was a step backwards from the 2020 season. And that is unbelievable, isn't it?
It is. No one would have imagined that. You know, what did we have last season? A barely above winning season. I think it won one more game in the league than we lost. You know, this year just hasn't been good enough. It's been a lot worse than last year. And you're thinking, how has that happened? If we're saying this in June, we're thinking, how the hell can that happen? You know, what can go wrong from here? Type of thing.
Well, I mean, if we're gonna go through as well. I mean, what did you think were the best performance we did all season was? What was your best performance for a whole team?
You could say the opening one against Huddersfield was up there. The second one against Salford, absolutely battering them. But then I'm thinking two poor oppositions. Wigan in the cup. Wigan. You know, Wigan have had a poor season by their standards, but they're still in a knockout game that it takes some doing. You know, and obviously we didn't have Jake Connor because he was suspended for that game. So I think that was up there. And then you look at, obviously, the win at Leeds. Yeah, defensively, it was brilliant, but... You know, and then those conditions as well, to roll your sleeves up and have the willingness to defend like that was pretty admirable. Obviously, what we did with the ball was, you know, less said the better. But
yeah,
it's a tough question that, you know, you look at obviously Lee going there and putting 64 points past them. You know, attacking, that was absolutely brilliant to watch. As far as watching a Hull FC performance goes, going to Lee on a Saturday afternoon, you know, early summer, it was warm. It, you know, at the beginning of June, and just watching Hull put, you know, take us out to the cleaners like that with some absolutely brilliant rugby that you don't necessarily associate with a whole side. Great. You know, ticked all the boxes. But I think, you know, overall in what we wanted of Hull FC this year was to show the fight, show the great resilience and a bit of quality when it was needed. I'd probably go for the Wigan Cup one because of what it was. Obviously, it put us into the semi-final. Yep. You know, it was a huge scalp, if you like, you know, getting over one of this country's big boys. And, you know, getting the last four best. So, yeah, I'd probably go for the Wigan Cup game. And again, 20 points to 10. And I think Adam Swift scored in the last minute. It was, I wouldn't say comfortable, but we were better than that. We were better than only just getting over the line. We beat them, as I say, I don't want to say comfortably, but we definitely beat them, and we beat them well that day. So, yeah, I'm going to go for Wigan in the Cup.
For me, Castleway in June. That was a good win, that one. We'd just come off the back of being beaten by Saints. And then, you know, I think the Thursday after that, so it was a really short turnaround, and we ended up going to Tigers and smashing them. And then I think the week after that, we beat Lee. And then the week after that, there was that real back-to-the-wall win against Huddersfield.
That's right, yeah.
Where, you know, we had that ragtag team. You know, we had players on the bench that didn't even get on, or players that only got on for a minute or so or whatever. It was ridiculous. And we still beat them. So I think that run of results in June, you know, that we lost to Saints in the semi-final of the Cup and then won the next three league matches. I think that was probably what at that point, I thought, well, we can do anything here, because we should have probably won that, arguably could have won the cup semi-final, and then went and beat Cass, and then went and beat Lee, and then went and beat Huddersfield. Yeah, that's the area of the season where I honestly thought anything's possible. So yeah, that for me, the worst result for me was you know, 4 weeks later, after an enforced layoff, you know, we play Huddersfield again, next game back, and get absolutely towelled up. And that was awful. And I think we all at the time went, Jesus, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Because that was so unlike anything we'd seen from that whole team for the previous 3 months of the season. We hadn't seen anything like that. We hadn't seen a capitulation. You know, we hadn't seen a capitulation since last year, really. And then, bang, we get absolutely schooled at Huddersfield. You know, that to me was our worst performance. Even beating, you know, even beating out going to Salford and getting smashed and you know losing to Leeds at Magic and all the rest of it, which was disappointing. We should have probably won that game. We could have put that to bed three or four times that game. And then like getting nil to Wigan was awful as well. And then Lee said about that last game against Wakefield the better. But yeah, that was the disappointing one for me was Huddersfield away after the layoff.
No, that's fair. And I'm just thinking back to a fortnight ago when Paul Cook came on the podcast and he said that, you know, basically, in essence, players don't go on the field and not try, and it's not like UFC where training in the latter stages of the season. And to some extent, he's right, because the Cass game right after the derby, it was flat. Everything about the game was flat. It was a Thursday night. The crowd was about half what it was on the previous Saturday. And the atmosphere was flat. You could hear a pin drop. The game was flat. There was just nothing about it. We sat there. We were going through the motions as a crowd. And what we saw on the field from both sides, it was two sides going through the motions as well. And that was really disappointing, especially after the high of the derby, you know, getting Jake Connor back and obviously, but then losing Josh Reynolds, losing Joe Cater.
Yeah.
You could see that in the crowd, and it reflected in the performance. And you just knew about it. It just wasn't the same, unfortunately. When we hadn't got Connor and Reynolds on the field together, well, the numbers don't lie. Our record without them this year is atrocious. We won one game without Connor, which was the Wigan game I've mentioned, and we won one game without Reynolds all year. Yet people slag them off and say they're the problem. Get real. You know,
it's because Reynolds isn't scoring 100-metre tries every week. People just don't... It's what he brings to the team. You know, it really is. It's what he... It's his work ethic. You know, it's... Do you remember? I can't remember what game it was. Might have been the cup game against Wigan, actually, possibly, when he was chasing down every lost cause. You know, there's a loose ball and he's probably got a 20% chance of going for it, but he's putting his body on the line and he's diving in and he's getting his head in where people's boots are flying and everything. Do you know, it's stuff like that actually it just rises the spirits of those around you. You know, and as good as Ben McMahon is, and as good as, you know, as a deputy, and as good as Connor can be, and as good as, you know, a few other players can be, we've got no one else like that. No one else that's infectious. No one else that will actually gee other players up and lead by example. Connor's gobby and mouthy, but he's gobby and mouthy to the opposition and to the referee. He's not necessarily the bloke who's standing behind the sticks after we've just conceded, shouting at his teammates to pull the socks up, is he?
No.
He just isn't. Whereas you get the feeling that you know, when someone like Reynolds talks, other professionals listen. And I think, you know, just because he's nearing the end of his career and, you know, he's not the player he was 5 years ago or whatever, he's still a bloody good asset for us. He really is. And I think he'll be better next year with a full pre-season under his belt and hopefully, you know, a clean bill of injury, health. I think he'll be good for us next year. But, yeah, I don't quite get the depth of people's feelings towards Reynolds. I don't think he's put many feet wrong for us.
There's a lot of people who mention off-field antics and I'm not going to go dive any further into that because you're bordering on slander, aren't you? Like I said... Boys are boys, aren't they? That's the thing. Lads are lads. And you look at the most professional organisation in world sport, arguably, and they've just been caught doing lines of white powder on their end of season piss up, if you like, and that's the Melbourne Storm. You're thinking, oh, mate, wow.
The NRL has got a massive cocaine problem. I mean, we are scratching the surface with a grainy video of three players celebrating jumping on tables with some powder on the table.
Well, yeah.
I'm talking. It is an ingrained and regular issue for every club in the league. And the clubs that don't think they've got a problem are lying to themselves, because they have.
I'd go further and say it's a problem in society. And I really would. Totally. And I'm not going to go down a massive drugs rampage now, but I tell you what, I worked in a few bars as a youth when I was a bit younger, late teens, early 20s. And I tell you what they used to confiscate on a Saturday night was eye-opening. Yeah. Really eye-opening. And you're thinking, that's what they've caught. What's going around that they haven't caught? And that's everywhere. Yeah. You know, and like I said, unfortunately, boys are boys, aren't they? And they do stuff. And, you know, you're not telling me that every single player in Super League's clean. There'll be someone from every single Super League club, every single Championship club, every single NRL club that have done things, you know, on weekends and piss-ups.
Let's look at what's happened in the NRL in the last couple of weeks, do you know? You've got, you know, the whole thing that's happened with Melbourne. You've got Michael Jennings of the Eels getting banned for 3 years for use of steroids. You've still got Bronson Sherry. What was his name? Singy Sherry at the Sharks. He's still banned because of steroid use. You've got what's his name? The young fullback at the Warriors. He's just been he didn't quit licensed premises when told. And then got arrested, and when they arrested him, they turned out his pockets and he had cocaine on him as well, Reece Walsh. So he's got a $400 fine from the cops and 9 months probation, and he'll probably get a couple of matches and about a $10,000 fine from the NRL as well. Mate, it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
It is.
They're all at it.
It is, yeah, and I tell you what, it's like when, I know this for a fact, that if Super League players, if they do it, they're told, don't you stay at home. You go stay out, you know, you get an hotel, go to a mate's house, family, whatever. Do not go home, because the drug thing, they can only test you in your own home, apparently.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Wider, or whatever they're called, yeah.
Yeah. So that is eye-opening when you have to actually say that, because you can't trust your players not to, you know, shoot someone up the nose or, you know, go, well.
It's bad, isn't it?
It is bad. It is bad. It is. It's a problem in society, as we're saying. But yeah, you know, what players have produced on the field this year, ironically, you know, the best of all FC has come from the one, and it's come from the six as well, because, as I say, Reynolds has been involved in everything, hasn't he? And the record without him, you know, it speaks volumes. But going back to the question, yeah, the worst performance of the season. I mean, if you're looking at the worst performance of the season, it was probably the last one against Wakefield, because of we didn't turn up, we didn't care. You know, 34 mil down at half-time.
The season had gone by then, hadn't it?
It had, yeah.
The season had gone by then. And that's disappointing.
Yeah, that's why I'm not going for it. That's why I'm not going for it. What I'm going to go for is the one I mentioned before, Cass at home. 4 days after the derby, we've just, you know, rode the hive, obviously beating nearest and dearest, and obviously the novelty factor, and you know, and all that. And then to get back in the playoff spaces at the expense of them as well, and thinking, right, hang on, right, okay, we've got Cass at home now, we've still got Salford away to come.
Yeah.
You've got Leeds at Magic Weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all winnable games on paper, and you're thinking, okay. And then the disappointment of that to be so flat, and just for it to be, you know, the fact that Cass actually scored their points in the first half off Hull mistakes as well. And they were from tap penalties, and we could have gone for goal, and it would have been a different story, but we didn't. We tapped it, we made an error, and then they came down and scored 7 of their points. That was really frustrating as well, because could have been looking at a different story. You know, you don't know what's going to happen after that, obviously, because there's still another half to go. But, yeah, all in all, taking everything into consideration, I'm going Cass at home.
I can see why. I don't think that's far from the truth.
A bit more positive now, I suppose, is player of the season.
For me, it's got to be Satai. I think I picked at the start of the season, I thought he was going to have a big year, and he did have a big year. He was nigh unplayable first half of the season, and I can't think of another Hull player that you could attach that that kind of vocabulary to. You know, he was brilliant and hard and hit hard in defence and was incredible with the ball in hand. It's got to be Satai for me.
No, I get that. He was an absolute wrecking ball at times this season. He was unstoppable, wasn't he? And it wasn't just league. You know, you saw the highlight reel of Satai when the club announced him as the player of the year. And he's busting tackles at Lee. But he was doing it against St Helens as well. You know, he's busting their middles. I think it was Matty Lees. And he ended up sending Matty Lees back to the bench because he had just absolutely flattened him. And that happened all the way through the year. There was that spell where we played Leeds on the Thursday and St Helens on the Monday. Thinking he's just backed that up as a, 18, 19 stone prop forward. Like, it was nothing. Yeah. He just killed it in both occasions. In that mid-season spell, he was unplayable. He was absolutely phenomenal. So I'm going to ask...
The only issue we've got, he didn't have any help.
Yeah. Well, what did Cook say? When your best player is a prop, you've got a problem. And he said that with all due respect. He's right. He was the best player by a mile. And I also agree with you there. It's definitely Chris Satai, player of the year. But I tell you what, again, if we're saying this at June... before his injury, I'm probably leaning towards Jake Connor. 22 of try assists in, what did he play, 16 Super League games, a couple of cup games as well. You know, he's influential and he did something in every game, whether it was a try or try assist.
Agreed.
But he's got to improve the other side of his game now. You know, what just say, oh, he's been brilliant, he's faultless, because he's not. Every player can improve that. Even the best player in the world can find something to improve. Yep. You know, he can always become a better player. But yeah, Jake Connor added something that we hadn't had. You know, for all Jamie Shaw's exploits. Don't get me wrong, Jamie Shaw's been an absolutely outstanding player for LSE over the years, and he's done things that are, you know, incredible. It's as simple as that. He scored 100 tries for the club. You know, only 24 players have done that. It's a hell of an achievement. But Connor's added an area that Shaw can't produce. It's as simple as that. And it's that final pass. And it was evident to see right from the start. And Connor nailed it time and time again. How many times did Freema? How many times did Adam Swift? How many times did even Mahit Fanu when he played? You know, get walking tries because of the brilliance of the fullback, and again, it's something we haven't seen for a while in a Hull FC jersey. It was, you know, arguably since Wade McKinnon played for the club, and the attacking side of Connor's game was absolutely phenomenal. Now the challenge is to obviously sort the other side of his game out and become even better. You know, Eddie Jones ironically came out and said he needs to get fitter. Connor agreed with him. Right, go get fitter then. Go become the complete, you know, athlete if you like. Improve the defensive side of your game. And become, I don't know, a Sam Tompkins or a Man of Steel. But, you know, people use this as a way to get at Connor and say, oh, yeah, look at Tompkins, look at the side of his game. What? Like Tompkins has never been run around before? People slag Connor off because, I'll use the Combined Nations for an example. Liam Farrell ran round him, didn't he, for his try in that game for England.
Yeah.
Well, I remember going to Wigan in 2016 and Liam Watts did that outrageously astounding offload to Jamie Shaw and he made Tompkins look like a mug. It happens.
Look, the greatest fullbacks in the world, if you're the last man of defence, you're the last line of defence, you've got an option, haven't you? You either take the man with the ball, hedge your bets and think that he's going to pass and try and get the bloke who's backing him up, or you go for broke and go for a bloody interception, you know? But, I mean, it happens in an instant. And, you know, I've seen Billy Slater, this year, Tedesco, one of the best defensive fullbacks in the league, made to look an absolute fool by, I think it was, what's his name? The prop from Brisbane. Payne Haas. Made him look an absolute idiot, sat him on his arse.
Jerome Luai running over Clint Gufferson. It happens, doesn't it?
It happens. Do you know? He's the last line of defence. It's like people earlier in the season having a go at Cam Scott when he found himself 1-on-3. What's he going to do?
Yeah.
It's not his fault that the players inside him have missed their... they've missed their assignment.
No, that is true.
It's not his fault.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. It happens and you can't cover everything as a fullback. But what you can say is there is area for improvement in the defensive side of his game. And he'll be the first to admit that. He'll know that. And that's the challenge for Jake Connor to do that and become even better. That's the challenge for every single player, though. You're looking at...
And the nice thing about Connor, mate, is he's got Shaw snapping at his heels.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And that can only be good for Hull. That can only be good for us.
Well, that's what I'm looking at Danny Outon now, and you're thinking, right, okay, Hull have just announced the signing. It's not a blockbuster. It's not Nathan Peets. That's who I wanted. You know, I've been very vocal. We've been very vocal, as have a couple of other cream writers as well. We wanted Nathan Peets to be Hull FC's, kingpin at nine, if you like. Yeah. And we signed Joel Overdewer instead. He was a bit of an unknown quantity. And it's obvious why we've done that, because he'll be second fiddle to Houghton. If Nathan Peets came to the club, there's your nine, Danny Houghton second fiddle. So I know exactly why they've done it. Obviously, it's cheaper as well. But you'd like to think this Joel Overdewer will come in and push Houghton and push him and say, right, if you're not performing, you're out. Johnston didn't really do that. He didn't really get his opportunities for a start. But, even this year when he came in, he started games and it just... The service was worse than Houghton's. Let's be honest, it was. Yeah. And he'd love to do it to come in and push Houghton, like you say, like Shaw will come in. He's already said he wants to play fullback. He's a fullback. He said this year he'll play wherever he was needed because he's just come out of, being injured for 11 months, nigh on a year. Yeah. Now he wants to be fullback again. So he's going to be pushing Connor from November the 1st when they go back to pre-season training.
Yeah. And look, to be honest, when we're talking about Lovadura as well, he's a tall, rangy hooker. He's not the kind of guy, he's not a your man at Panthers or even like a Harry Grant or someone like that, or a Brandon Smith at Melbourne. He's not one of those little scooty dummy halves. He's tall, he's rangy, he's a bit more physical. He's almost like an extra 13, he's almost like an extra loose forward. It'd be interesting to see whether we carry on playing him at hooker or whether he just becomes another middle,
That would arguably frustrate me, because it's like when we did the Hull, when we've done podcasts this year, we said all along, we need a nan. In fact, before we even started doing the podcast, you wrote in the blog, I wrote in the fanzine, we want a nan. Nan was the biggest thing we needed to solve. And we've brought someone in who can play 13, he can play back row, I think he can play water boy, he can do a bit of this, he can be equipment manager, he can do the lot, can't he? I don't know.
That's what you've got to watch.
I want a nan, and I say, I hope he comes in, gets a shot in pre-season. Imagine whoever the first pre-season game is, it's usually against a lower league opposition, you'd like to think he'll be the starting nan. I hope he absolutely kills it. Because that's what we need.
I agree with you, I don't think he's going to be a starting nan. You're right. If we'd have signed Peets, we'd have signed a starting nine, and Houghton would have been relegated to the bench, and it would have sent a real message and blah blah blah. However, Peets is 32. It wouldn't have been a long term signing. If you get Lovadua in and he proves that he's good and he proves that he's a longer term thing, he's what, Lovadua? 23.
Peets is 30 by the way. Not 32, 30. So okay, you would have got 2 or 3 years out of him.
You'd have got 2 or 3 years out of him. So, I mean, arguably, Lovadua, cheaper to start with the possibility, and on only a one-year deal as well, so he's going to be hungry and he's going to want to prove himself. I'm not displeased with it, but you're right, it's not massively inspiring, is it?
It's not, no. But, like you say, I'm not going to criticise the individual, because I know what unknown quantities have done at Hull FC in the past 5 years.
Totally.
And we've been down that road, and some of these signings, we're thinking, who? Bloody hell, we all love him now, don't we? So, we'll give him his chance like we do with anybody that comes through the door, but it's not when you're linked with Nathan Peets and then you sign someone who can do a bit of this and that, and I want an outright nan. I want someone to really push Houghton and really challenge that hooking spot. Everyone can see it. Media has started saying it now. Pundits say it on TV. Hull FC need a hooker, a bloody good hooker, because they've fallen behind. Look at the England squad right now. There's no Roby, there's no Daryl Clark, there's no Josh Hodgson. Where's Outon? Oh, wait, there's still hookers in Soap League that are better than him. That's why the Walker brother from Warrington's playing, and obviously Paul McShane. Why isn't Houghton in there? Oh, because he's not top 6 or 7 anymore. That's the reality of it. There are at least half a dozen hookers in Soap League that are better than him. I didn't even mention Michael McAlorum yet. He was outstanding in the grand final.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the problem. we need a hooker. And hopefully Lovadua can be something that we desperately need and can really push Houghton and really challenge him and obviously, bring some quality at the nine. Effort with Houghton's not a problem. We all know that. It's actually quality and skill set. That's what we want.
That ball should fizz.
Exactly.
From the base of the ruck, the ball should fizz, and it should hit its mark dead on every time.
Absolutely.
I think half the problem we've got is that when he's passing, when Houghton in particular is passing under fatigue, the ball's going a little bit in front or a little bit behind or a little bit high or a little bit low, and it's just stopping our momentum, and that's our issue.
Attacking excellence starts from the ruck, doesn't it? Yeah. Yep. If you've got your first receiver catching balls at his bloody ankle or above him or behind him, like you say.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, Jordan Johnston, even when he comes on fresh, he doesn't raise the bar. You know, he's just as erratic with his balls from acting half as Houghton is, having played none of the minutes that Houghton does. So, you know, if you do get a Lovadua or someone like that comes in and he's all of a sudden very, very good from acting half, straight away that raises the bar. And, you know, then you look at Houghton as someone like a Josh Hodgson who will stay on the field, but he'll drop back to 13 and he'll just become an extra middle and an extra tackler. And you know what? That's not a bad blueprint for him.
It's not a bad blueprint. Yeah, I agree with that. But
start him at hooker, and then let him drop back.
I'll tell you what, though. I'd rather have... I look at Leeds. Cruz Lehman, again, rightly in the England squad. Sorry, I forgot to mention him earlier. Cruz Lehman's in the England squad, and rightly so. Another hooker who was better than what we've got. But then they brought Brad Dwyer on, you know, pretty much every game this season.
Yep.
And he added to what they had. You know, there was instances where they lost an halfback. I mean, Magic, they lost Robert Louis. Cruz Lehman went to 7. It was effortless. Brad Dwyer came on. He didn't just stick to a 7 and a 9, though. If Brad Dwyer was jumping out the ruck, Cruz Lehman was there, and that's all they played. And we haven't got that. You know, even across the river, they've got Parcell and they've got Jez Litton, two live wires out the ruck. Yeah. And it absolutely kills me to say it, but that's one area where they're absolutely killing it as far as we're concerned. Yeah. It's miles better than what we've got.
Yeah, and again, letting Litton go has come back to bite us in the arse.
It has, and arguably Jordan Abdul too. I mean, obviously, we didn't really let Jordan Abdul go. He put a transfer request in, we all know that, didn't we? So, that's the thing, you know, I mean, my NRL club, Penrith, they bring players through like M&Ms. They can't keep them all. It's sad, some players opt to go, some players get pushed out, some players obviously come to the brutal realisation that their future is going to be elsewhere because there's a state of origin player or a best halfback on the planet in front of them.
Yeah, you know? In front of them, yeah.
No, that's the reality of it. That happens. But, yeah, it's frustrating. It really is. And it's a position that we've harped on about for, I'm going to say years now, because it is years. It's plural. We've done it for 2 years at least. But unfortunately, the thing is, it's a hard thing to accept for a lot of fans. That's the problem. But I think more are actually opening their eyes and realising it. But, yeah, this was supposed to be a positive thing we've ended up on. We're not talking about the hooking situation.
What we're talking hookers. Well, while we're talking hookers, obviously Brandon Smith is very much on the nose, being the operative at Melbourne because of what's happened there. Harry Grant is more or less going to make that 9 jersey his own, I think, next year. I reckon Brandon Smith will go to this new Redcliffe Dolphins at the end of next year because they're basically looking like they're going to appoint Wayne Bennett as coach. Giving him a 3-year deal at the age of 73 or whatever he is. So he'll be coaching until he's mid-70s. So it looks like, I reckon, Brandon Smith will end up at the Redcliffe Dolphins. Now, the interesting one that's going on at the moment is that Josh Hodgson has been told by Canberra that if he can find himself another club, he's welcome to find one. And the Tigers have steamed in, despite the Tigers having probably two of the best young hookers in the game at the moment, have come on and just gone, well, we want him to mentor them. And they want him. He could be a West Tigers player as soon as next week. The only thing that's stalling that is the fact that the new Tigers football manager is your friend and mine, ex-Robin Tim Sheens. Has just gone back at the Tigers as a football manager at the age of 70. So he's there as kind of head of recruitment and retention now. So he's got to run his rule over what he thinks is the keeping list and the getting rid of list. And he has identified he wants Josh Hodgson straight away.
Well, there you go. Again, if Josh Hodgson finishes his career in Super League, you'd like to think that we'd be knocking on the door as well, because again, it's a position we need. It's a position, again, next year we're in the same situation because Houghton's out of contract.
that's why we said last 3 weeks ago as well. There was, and I think at the time we said, look, this is way out of left field. But the rumor was that the Raiders would be keen to let him go if they could find someone for him. We were looking for a hooker, and he's English born. He wouldn't have counted on the overseas roster. You know what I mean? It'd have been perfect.
Yep.
It would have been a perfect signing for us.
Exactly what we need. You know, someone who jumps out of dummy half and he's a dominant nine. It's exactly what we want. But
yeah,
and it works for Canberra.
Good kicking game. Takes the pressure off your 7 and your 6.
Yeah.
Good talker. You know, the best ball stealer in the bloody game.
Although, did you see the role changes? They finally got rid of that.
Role change, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I hate that 2-on-1 thing where you can just come out. Oh yeah. I didn't like it, so I'm glad that's gone. Obviously, scrums are back next year.
He's gone from the Super League, mate. It's not gone from the NRL.
Yeah, from the NRL. Yeah. That's true. Well, that's the farce of rugby league, isn't it? The fact that Super League come up with these rule changes and then the NRL do, and yeah, it's a joke. It's like the 2-point field goal only exists in the NRL, not in Super League, not in the Championship, not in the French elite division.
Is the 2040 rule in Super League? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that is a rule.
Yeah, but no one's ever kicked one.
No. And then there's that tap thing as well, where if you tap it from a 20 and you built the ball, it bounces and goes in touch, you get the ball from wherever it, you know, wherever it goes into touch. Yes. But I don't think I've ever seen that before either. Yeah, it's just...
No, that's a guy else. Yeah.
It's just, the fast rules, like the thing. Well, like you say, they tinker for tinkering's sake, don't they? And it's like, why fix what's not broken? We've got the product ain't the problem. The product's outstanding. It's the administration of it that, obviously, is the big issue. So, back to some LSC season awards then. I think we've both agreed there. We've gone on a bit of a rant, but Chris Sattai followed by Jake Connor.
That's where we were. Yes.
Young player of the year. And for me, it's split. I'm going to mention two names, but I'll let you go first. I've got two in mind.
I think I've got the same names as you, which is Connor Wynne and Cam Scott.
Yeah.
I think Cam Scott shades it just for the amount of time he spent on the pitch, to be honest. I don't think he did much wrong this year. I think, you know, he's on a hiding to nothing, because when he comes into the team, he's replacing a Griffin or a Tuivasa or whoever, you know. He's replacing a name. But I thought he did very, very well. There was a couple of games there where he didn't look out of place at all, and there was a lot of traffic going his way. Any team worth a salt is going to look at a guy who's young and hasn't got a lot of first grade experience and put a lot of traffic his way. But I thought he's coped with it pretty well this season. He's been shown up a couple of times, but then our entire team's been shown up a couple of times. He's looked pretty strong.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. A young player gets exposed now and again. Well, senior players have been getting exposed at LFC this year, so it's no disgrace. And one thing you can say about Cam Scott is he's improved as the year's gone on, and his performances have got stronger and stronger and stronger. And there was a spell where he was doing really well. You know, this ironically, we go to Salford and we get smashed, and our two best players were literally Cam Scott and Connor Wynne. Why is that the case? Where are these senior players? Where are you? You know, why are you standing up when we need you most? And things with Cam Scott, he's not the best young player in the competition. You know, he's not a Will Price who has come on and absolutely killed it in his first year as Super League, a Harry Newman at Leeds, you know, blah, blah, blah. But he's a steady player that's still learning his craft. He's 22 now, and he's got better and better. And he's also getting bigger and bigger. And physique is a big thing at centre, especially when you've got, like you say, you're coming off the back of Josh Griffin, who's a huge, you know, specimen. And same with Carlos, and obviously they're intimidating to an opposition. They got fought. I mean, the yardage is ridiculous. I mean, that's one thing we really have missed this year is Josh Griffin. And I don't like stats.
Yeah.
I don't like meter stats, because I think they can be misleading. But I won't say they're misleading when it's 200, 200, 200, 200, 200, or knocking on the door of 200 every single week. It's like a Brian Toa.
He gets us moving, doesn't he?
Exactly.
He gets us moving.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Yeah.
And Cam Scott maybe will become that in time. You know, who knows? Players develop at different rates. That's another thing you've got to take into consideration. How many times have you seen an 18-year-old peak at 18? And by 22, 23, he's not progressed anymore. Where you could get someone who's coming to the first team set up, like Cam Scott at 18, steadily got better. By the time he's 25, 26, he could be a very, very good Super League player. And the thing is, he's liked at the club as well, isn't he? Players like him.
Yeah, absolutely. And look at Cody Walker at Souths. I mean, his first grade debut at 26.
Well, exactly. There's always room for late bloomers. It happens, you know. Like I say, people develop at different rates. And yeah, I've been very impressed with Cam Scott. I am actually going to go with Connor Wynne, though. just for the sake of some variation, just so I'm not agreeing with you all the time. I really like Conor Wynn. I think there's a hell of a player there. And it was interesting to see what he said in local media, actually, last week about, I actually see my future at centre. And that's really interesting because at full-back, he's behind two very good players, in Jake Connor and Jamie Shaw. At centre, again, he's behind two very good players in Carlos Tumavavi and Josh Griffin. Arguably, Cam Scott, too, was probably third pick. So you're probably looking at him as a fourth-choice centre. But that's where he wants to play. But when he's coming, he's good on his feet. He's got pace. I see, he's strong enough to bounce out with tackles. I say, tackle busts are good. He's just exciting. He's a player you want to go and watch. And like I say, it's that thing again, pace. All FC need pace. We love pace. We want more of pace. And what I like about Conor Wynn as well is he's so energetic in everything he does. You know, you can see what it means to him playing for... He's just a young lad that's playing for his hometown team. And it shows because he absolutely loves it. And you see that every time he steps out onto the field. And yeah, he rated this season as his best in the three that he's had since he's come into the first team. And I'd agree with that. You know, he showed some glimpses in his breakthrough year, 2019. He got a couple of opportunities last year. Fortunately, he had a game against Wigan in the Cup where we got trounced at Salford that he'd probably like to forget. But, you know, this year, he's been good. He's come into the side and he's never let us down. That's what you want of a young player, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And you know, when he has come into the side as well, he has literally been thrown in. You know, he's been thrown in on the wing, or he's been thrown in the centres, or he's been thrown in, you know, at full-back or whatever. Or he's come off the bench and had to fill some big shoes when someone's gone down injured. You know, it's, for a young kid, our back line is a pretty daunting place to slip into, I think. You know, and he's, you know, you're at full-back. You've got two international full-backs in the club, in Shaw and Connor. You know, you go in the centres, you've got Griffin and Tumavave, two fantastic centres. And then, you know, you deputise on the wing and you've got, you know, you've got the likes of Fanua or Farima or Swift in front of you. You know, for a young kid, you know, that's a big ask. And he's very rarely let us down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But throw one more in there. Try of the season. I've got two in mind, and they're very different. The Jack Brown one at Lee went through about 15 sets of hands and it's absolutely champagne rugby. Yeah, they're a side who finished bottom and yeah, they've gone back down to the Championship, but that's, you know, stuff that you don't necessarily associate with Full FC, and that was disco dancing stuff. It was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
The one that really impressed me the most, though, in terms of what we're looking to bring into the side this year and what Hodgson's improved, and obviously the fullback position, was the three more try against Rovers, his second one, where it literally went 9-7-6-1, bang. Yes.
Yeah, that's mine. That's mine, actually, yeah.
And it just, you know, as far as, you know, implementing what you want from your link between your six and your seven for a start, and then your one to actually produce that final pass, it's everything that we've lacked. And, you know, just three more for three more to catch the ball and just slide over. Brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. That's I'd probably throw in. Let me have a think. I'm just kind of replaying tries in my head now. There was one of Connor's tries against. No, I've lost it. But it was earlier in the season. It might have been against Leeds, maybe. Over on the right hand side, when the ball went through a couple of pairs of hands, so he just hit the line absolutely perfectly and just glided through.
Yeah.
It was an absolutely stunning try. But I agree that movement, because it's what we want, isn't it? For it to go through every pivot's hands.
Yeah.
And end up on the winger who just walks in without or slides in without a finger on him. That's what you've got to look for in playmakers, isn't it?
Because, absolutely.
And, you know, you've made the point several times, you know. You know, Talanoa used to score spectacular tries because he had to, because he was getting the ball with three players or two players in front of him and still having to try and score. You know, when you're not an athlete like Talanoa, you know, what hope have you got? You're going to get bundled into touch more often than you're not. So, you know, the speed of the ball from the play of the ball and from your six and your seven and your one, that's absolutely, you know, it's necessary.
It's imperative, isn't it?
So, yeah, you're right.
It's like Greg Eden scoring, you know, countless tries at Cass. What's he had to do for 90% of them? Nothing. You know, Nan could have scored half of them. She's 86.
He's not a great player. He's not a great finisher, Greg Eden. He's been a player that's been very, very lucky to have great service over his career. And when he hasn't had great service in his career, he's floundered.
Oh, yeah,
like
exactly.
He did at Brisbane, like yeah. He did at Rovers. You know, he's not a creative player.
No, absolutely not. I'll throw one more try in, actually. The best moment of skill that I've seen in a Hull FC player this year, and it was Adam Swift's try against Leeds and the cut-out pass from Jake Connor. Fizzed it across, yes. Cut-out ball. Absolutely brilliant. Made Hull look like a mug. The line from Josh Griffin to deceive it was brilliant, but the pass was on the money. It was like a bullet. It just flew to the wing, and Swift obviously caught it, ran into the corner. You know, emphasised everything that we want in a Hull fullback, and it was the play was outstanding. And we're talking about at the time saying you won't see a better pass this season, and I don't think we did, to be honest. It was, yeah, it was phenomenal. And obviously there was 21 more of them as the season went on. That was a great play. But yeah, I think we're in agreement there. The 3-0 one against Rovers, for the fact, like I say, it went 9-6, 7-1 bang. England squad then. England play France this weekend in France, in Perpignan, which is great. It's not at Lee on a Wednesday night or at Cass on a Friday night with 2,000 there. You know, this should be good. I'd be interested to see what type of crowd Perpignan gets. The squad itself, well, it's obviously surplus of NRL-based players, which obviously weakens it a bit. There's obviously players in UK-based players in Super League that have obviously pulled out through injury, operations, end of season stuff. That's obviously been going on, you know, nursing, niggly stuff and whatnot. So it's definitely an understrength England, but it's also an understrength France as well. They've got, you know, two or three really big names that are missing. I suppose the point from a Hull FC point of view is, where the hell's Jake Connor? And I'm going to go on a bit of a rant now, because seeing people try to justify it. How can you justify it? This is a bloke that can play one, can play three, can play four, he can play six, and he can play seven. He's played three of those positions for England. I know you know all this, mate, but I'm just going to rant for the sake of our listeners.
Yeah.
His England debut, Denver, against New Zealand. England were struggling at the time. New Zealand had raced into an early lead, comes on, rips him to shreds, puts the pass out to Ryan Hall, puts Elliot Whitehead through, changes the game. Then he goes through, dummies the fullback, you know, Darlene Watini's to Lesnack, no mug, goes under the sticks. What a bloody debut that is. A few months later, home soil, Kiwis, plays in the left centre, scores a try in the first test, kicks the goals to obviously make sure that England win 18-16 in what was a brutal, tough, you know, absolutely sensational test match. Second one at Anfield, I mean, he's the reason Tommy Makinson got the golden boot, simple as that. He was phenomenal in that game at Anfield. Quick hands for one of Makinson's tries, the flick pass as well. It was against Joey Manu. Joey Manu was one of the best centres in the NRL.
Yes.
Playing for Sydney Roosters. And he made him look like a mug in those two tests. It was phenomenal. 100%. So he's done it in two different positions, in two different countries, against arguably, well, if you want to debate it with New Zealand, you know, last time New Zealand played Australia, they beat them, didn't they? So you could arguably say the number one nation in the world at the time. Let's not forget that actually, before New Zealand came to the England in 2018, they'd just beaten Australia, actually. So, yeah, I think I'm right in saying that. They would have been the number one.
And we haven't beaten them for years.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, there's obviously an issue there with Wayne. Obviously, Sean Wayne doesn't like him or doesn't rate him or something. But when you look at some of the players that are in that team over him, you know, Reece Lynn, you know, really? I mean, you look at Zach Hardacre and John Bateman have basically got in because they're ex-NRL players, and that's the only bloody reason, I think.
Because the Wigan, it's the Wigan connection, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Wigan connection. Bateman's had a bloody average season, and Hardacre's not been fantastic either.
I'd still put Bateman in an England squad, though, even if he has been out of form. I'd still put Bateman in the squad. Hardacre, I'm with you, though.
Bateman of 2 years ago, yes. Bateman of last year, no. Of this year, no. For me, I just don't think he's done enough. Hardacre, really. You know, yeah, there's a lot of players there that you look at and go, really? I'm glad to see. Look, you're right. Ledsky, Harry Newman, Cruz Leeming, Matty Lees, even. You look at them and you think, yeah, they're due a go.
They're
you
the know, future of England. Even. Yeah.
Niall Evolds, even, you know, he's done it consistently over a few years now, and it's nice to see him get some recognition. Abdul, even, you know, has done really well for Rovers this year, and much as it pains me to say it, he has. But yeah, there's a few players there that you look at and go, really?
You mentioned three players there in our levels, Harry Newman, Jordan Abdul. Yep, they've had great seasons for their clubs, and they deserve all the plaudits they're getting. But I tell you what, Jake Connor's better than all three of them. Natural ability, he is a better centre than Harry Newman. We forget that Jake Connor at centre. I've just told you what he did. And I've just told you all what he did against New Zealand. He's done it for LFC as well, on the left and on the right. He's arguably a better attacking fullback than Niall Evald. You know, you could argue Niall Evald is a better athlete and he can cover the ground defensively. But I tell you what, with ball in hand, it's ball in hand that's going to beat Australia.
He's got a patch on him, ball in hand, you're right.
I mean, you need to score points to beat Australia. The last two times we played Australia, we scored 4 points in one game and 0 points in the second game. That one was the final, World Cup final.
So what do you need? You need a player that creates more money, more tries than any other player in Super League, and that is Connor, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, yeah, English player. Obviously, Josh Drinkwater got the most, didn't he? But yeah, that's the reality of it. You need someone who can unlock a defence, and obviously when you're talking Australia, New Zealand, that's the pinnacle of defence. So. And then you look at...
He's got to be in the squad. He has to be in that squad.
In a 22-man squad. And this is where people... Like, they could talk about his temperament and the fact that he overreacts and he's gobby. Right, okay. After that Zach Ardeke incident at Wigan, when he obviously clashed and he gave away the penalty that ultimately won Wigan the game, can you tell me another incident this season where that happened?
No.
Every alteration that we had with an opposition... Tell you what, Josh Reynolds was the main antagonist. Wasn't Jake Connor. This Jake Connor being a liability lack is an absolute myth. He runs his mouth, don't get me wrong, and he still runs his mouth now. But he'll do it when he's, I don't know, he's 15 yards away from an opposition. You can see it gets picked up on my Sky camera sometimes. You can see he's gobbling off. We don't know what he's saying, probably winding up in opposition. That's what he does. But I tell you what, he hasn't been a liability after that Hardacre incident. So all that lack is a load of shite. It really is.
Yeah.
That side of his game, people talk about all the time. And I tell you what, again, it goes back to when he's played for England. His temperament has been absolutely exemplary. He's done nothing wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what, right? You put him on the bench. If you don't think his temperament's good enough to be a starting fullback, or you know, you're unsure of him defensively or whatever, you don't think he's fit enough or whatever, a player like that, with that level of skill, you throw him on the bench. You put him on the last 20 minutes against a tired defence.
That's the thing. Yeah, exactly. You just mentioned another position where he can play. So I've just said he can play 1, 3, 4, 6, and 7. You're right. He can play 14 as well. He can play that role on the bench and come on when needed.
Perfect. He is the perfect substitute back.
I mean, I'd still argue he should be starting either at 1, 3, or 6 or 7.
Absolutely.
I don't care where.
If you're saying that there's incumbent players that you can't drop a, you know, whoever because they've done a job for you before or whatever, fine, put him on the bench. Because I'm telling you now, you put him on with 20 minutes to go, and you give him that Tommy Turbo, the Trbojevic kind of roving brief that he had on Origin, and say, follow the ball, mate, just go where the ball is and create something. That's what Jake Connor will do. He'll create something. He'll go through. He'll be that extra pivot. He'll pop up on the left. He'll pop up on the right. He'll pop up wherever you want him to. You know, it's just, yeah, it seems to me. I mean, we're always going to be biased because he's our player and because he's developed as a whole player. And you know, we've probably, you know, he's probably the player he is because of us. You know, I mean, he came to us very much as a diamond in the rough, didn't they, from Huddersfield? And we've polished him and we've moulded him into what he is. Arguably, he could be better than he is right now. You know, I think he's been allowed to kind of get away with a couple of substandard performances under various coaches. And I think if he'd have had a stronger disciplinarian in front of him, he might have been a better player by now. And I think that's one thing you can say about him. But regardless, you've got a team there. If that's the best 20 players that we can. Put on an England shirt, well, then there's something wrong.
Yeah, obviously, we've mentioned the fact that obviously it doesn't have any NRL-based players, and there is actually a lot of players like Sam Tompkins who have pulled out with injury. But even still, if that's the best of the rest, no one's telling me that Jake Connor isn't in there because of his ability, lack of ability. That's nonsense to even say that. He's got more ability than arguably 98% of that team, that 22-man squad that's been named.
Has to be a personality clash with Wayne.
Well, it's like when he was brought into the Combined Nations side at the last minute to represent his Trinidad and Tobago. I think we said it was Jamaican at the time, but it's actually Trinidad.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, Grandad. I want to say Grandad. I think that's right. Yeah, and he showed his exploits in that game. He put two tries on a bloody plate for the exiles, whatever you want to call them, bloody other nationalities. You kind of go that far back. You had a huge role to play in what was an England defeat, let's not forget.
Yep.
And it just absolutely mesmerises me. Again, when people talk temperament, I remember Jake Connor. I went to that warm-up game ahead of the Kiwi series in 2018. It was at Lee on a weeknight. Yep. Here we go. Yeah, I was one of the two people there. He played seven. He had seven on his back. Led the side from first receiver, ran the show, kicked all the goals, and people saying, yeah, it's only France, and yeah, England being pretty comfortable. I think it was 44-6, something in the region of that. But he showed everything you want in an international player. And for people, again, to go on that...
You can only beat what's in front of you.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And he did it against the best anyway when he's up against Manu, and he did it at halfback in Denver, and it's just... The argument's faltered. It really is. And like you say, it's got to be a personality clash. It's not down to ability. Nowhere. And then I'm thinking, hang on, if it's down to temperament, you know, stuff like that, you know, that side of the game, then why the hell have you got Saka in there? Because he's just as bad. It's sort of like, you've just been an hypocrite now, ain't you, boy? Because Hardacre, he's just, you know, he runs his mouth, he gobs off to the players, he starts scuffles, he's always in there, he'll, you know, and look at his off-field history as well. That's the thing with Jake Connor. What's he done off the field? He's never been in the news for, you know, beating up students, nutting people in the street, you know, shooting shit up his nose. You never hear about that with Jake Connor. Well, it's like, okay, we're going down hypocrite street now, aren't we? Because Zach Adick is in the squad. I'm going to start going on a massive rant now. Actually, get filled up with anger because I think it's absolute bollocks. It is complete utter bollocks that Jake Connor in the England squad. And you mentioned club bias earlier. It's nothing to do with club bias because we've been very vocal with the fact that we haven't produced any players in the past 20 years that have been good enough. Like I say, when Paul Cook came on, again, I'll reference it, because we were talking about Yemo, we were talking about Gazzarino, we were talking about Cook himself, Richard Orme, Paul King.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were all good enough, but that's 20 years ago, mate.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I remember Andrew Johns being interviewed over here, and it was just after he'd had his little, you know, sojourn at Warrington, and we'd sent him home. And he was being interviewed, and because Great Britain, England were touring or Great Britain were touring, and they said to him, you know, what do you think of the England side? And he's like, well, it's unbalanced. I don't like the squad. He said, I can think of three players that I played against in England that should be in that squad. He said, one of the most naturally talented footballers I think I've ever seen in my life, he said, is a fella called Paul Cook at Hull. He said, and he's nowhere near this squad. He's never even been mentioned in this squad. And he said, I found that absolutely baffling. And that was Andrew Johns saying that.
Arguably one of the best to play the game.
The best, yeah, exactly. And immortal, you know. It's been going on for years. It's been going on for years and years and years.
Well, just you could put a non-Hull FC spin on and say Lee Breers.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it was Great Britain, because obviously he's Welsh, when it was Great Britain, why the hell wasn't Lee Breers in that side?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, look, Jesus, I remember him kicking us to death with field goals. I think didn't he once kick three drop goals and we lost by a point?
Yeah, in a single game, yeah. But he was an outstanding player. You know, Warrington, obviously club legend, but in his prime, he was pretty much untouchable. Why weren't he playing for Great Britain? It's just,
yeah. There's madness. A few like that. Yeah, the best uncapped players ever, you know?
Mm. Yeah, but you're scratching your head thinking, why? Why are they uncapped? And, yeah, that's not to say that I hope France win, because I'm English. You know, I loved the French game, don't get me wrong. We were absolutely buzzing that Catalans made the grand final. We were, you know, still really happy for Toulouse that they've come up to Super League and wish them all the best and hope they can survive first and foremost and then prosper. Absolutely. I want France to be strong as well. I want France to be competitive. But I still hope England beat them, obviously. That goes without saying it. Well, you'd imagine so anyway. Yeah. I hope France give England a game, though. And I'll still support England on Saturday. I still want England to win. I'll still cheer them on. But I just think it's an absolute farce that Connor ain't in the squad.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, while I'm on an England crusade as well, I look at the England football team, and I love watching England football. I've loved watching them over the past 5 years under Gareth Southgate. Southgate ain't for everyone, but I tell you what, England are much more professional now. They are much more together. They actually look like they know what they're doing, which is a mean feat. I remember Steve McLaren, while he was the Broly, you know, Fabio Capello couldn't get past the quarterfinal. Look what bloody Southgate's done. It's phenomenal. He's got a good young group of players there, and I look at the England Rugby League team. That's what I want. I want that for our, you know, for our national side in Rugby League as well. And how do we do that? Well, for a start, we need to play games. I mean, Combined Nations aside, this is our first game since the third test against New Zealand 3 years ago, so 2019, we had the rubbish, poorly put together at the last minute Great Britain tour, which was a disaster. 2020, obviously, COVID ruined everything, but we don't play enough internationals, that goes without saying. And ironically, again, you look at that Kiwi series in 2018, you look at the rise of the attendances when people actually started. You create a buzz, don't you, for big events, and we've talked about big events in rugby league all year and the need to create them. 17,000 were at the KCON for the first test. 26,000 were at Anfield. All right, England just won the series, won the first two tests. Dead rubber, third test. Ah, there's going to be no one there. Ellen Road was nearly sold out. 34,000 people there. It's like, that's what you're doing. It. You create a brand. England's the brand. You create events, right? Great. New Zealand's the event. And then, you get a buzz behind it and you market it and you go off that. And this is what winds you up with England, the fact that we don't play enough games. I mean, we should be playing a minimum of 5 England games a year. Arguably one at the start, yeah. One mid-season, and then obviously your end-of-season test matches.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, the issue that we've got is that, with COVID and everything, it has confused things a bit. But, you know, it's about getting the right opposition, you know. And Australia not travelling, New Zealand not travelling, and of course as wanting to play either at the end of the season when players are knackered and don't want to do it or blah blah, it's hard. Which is why a strong France team is an absolute must for our game, because we need constant quality opposition for us to prepare us to take on the Australians and the Kiwis and, you know, your Tonga and Samoa, who are getting stronger and stronger and stronger with every passing year. The World Cup is the World Cup, and, you know, unfortunately it happened. But, you know, hopefully next year we'll get it and it'll be a hell of a competition. But we need a strong France. Do you know, that's absolutely essential for us to move forward as a sport. We get a strong France, then we get a strong England. I mean, you're never going to get a strong Scotland, Wales, do you know, Ireland. You're not going to get a domestic competition like that, like a Four Nations competition, because there's just the raw material's not there. There isn't enough good players. But look, arguably what we need is the best player in the Super League to be Welsh or to be Scottish and to nail his colours to the mask and say, I'm not playing for England, I'm playing for Scotland. In the same way that players over here have said, I'm not going to play State of Origin, I'm going to commit myself to Samoa or Tonga. Mm. You know? Which is really important. And it's boosted those teams. You know, when you've got, you've got players going, you know, yes, I could quite easily play for Queensland off in New South Wales, and I'd get into the team week in, week out, but I don't want to. I want to play for my country of origin, you know, and that's really important. But you need a big name. You need someone huge to do it. And the player over here that did it was Tal Malola, you know, from the Cowboys. I don't want to play for Queensland. I want to play for my country.
Mm.
You know, so if we get a player like that, who then says, no, I'm Scottish, or no, I'm Irish, or no, I'm Welsh, and that's what I want to do, and I want to stay there, well, then you're going to get more players nailing their colours to the mask as well, you know, a Regan Grace, or I'd hope that he would always play for Wales and wouldn't be tempted to play for England. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you where you're coming from, absolutely. But it's wanting that player to, obviously it's getting that player to come forward and do that, isn't it? And then obviously having a foundation in that country, whether it's Scotland or whether it's Wales, to actually capitalise on that.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the Irish game, the women's side just played a first Irish Ireland test match. First one in history. So that's a step forward for their game. But we need something for the men's now, don't we? And
we've had a lot of false dawns, mate.
We have, yeah.
We've had a lot of false dawns.
Well, yeah. We have.
There was a World Cup, I can't remember when it was, early 2000s. You know, you had Danny Brough and Richard Horne playing for Scotland.
Mm. Well, you still see that now when Scotland do play. It's full of players like Liam Wood, Adam Walker, you know, people like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Richard Horne qualified to play for Ireland, Wales, England and Scotland because he was born on the Isle of Man, or his parents had
Isle of Man
heritage or whatever. So he kind of like, you know, it's similar to, what's his name, Letizia, who played for Southampton. Matt Letizia could have played, because he was born on the Channel Islands, he could have played for France or England.
Mm.
You know, it's just one of those weird little things.
Yeah, but again, it's wanting the international game to prosper and realising that the international game prospering is what's best for rugby leagues. It's what Rugby Union done, and they've turned their game from inverted commas amateur into, you know, a global sport. That's what it is now. Rugby league's not a global sport, sadly, but if they actually pull the finger out and get the international game sorted, it could be, you know. The potential is there to grow. It's always, you know, we've always got growth in rugby league. Look what happened when Catalans took a game to the new camp. You know, there's always stories that have happened. You know, even Toronto when they were about, you know, getting 5-figure crowds. Growth is there. You can't tell me that the potential for growth to make rugby league something other than M62 sport isn't there, because it is. And we all want what's best for the game. Obviously, what's best for the game is making sure that England are playing regularly for a start. They're playing good opposition, which hopefully they'll get in France. And building for the future. And like you say, Wales need to be playing Scotland and Ireland and try strengthen first and then compete with France. And once they've done that, maybe, you know, long-term vision, compete with England. Rugby Union did it. They've done it somehow. So Rugby League's got to do it. Hopefully that'll start with, like you say, a good World Cup next year. Domestically, something that really caught my eye. And I did mention it actually on a few podcasts. It was a Salford steward. When we went to Salford at the back end of August, said, oh yeah, we might be swapping grounds with Salford City. And me and my old man looked at him and thought, are you mental, mate? Wait, what about... Because we couldn't believe
it. It looks like it's going to happen.
It's like, when have you ever had a situation of a rugby league club swapping stadiums with a football club? It's insane, isn't it? It's ironic because, like, you know, they've basically been punished, aren't they? Because 2008, when Rugby League decided to go down the franchise route and get all these licences all the criteria. Yeah, they had to move out the Willows because of that. Tipped the box, did the honourable thing, went to the AJ Bell, you know, nice shiny new 12,000 capacity all seat stadium. Right, brilliant. Nice one, lads. Cass and Wakefield are probably thinking, you stupid idiots.
Yeah. Then, because they've been threatened and nothing's ever happened.
Yeah, they just say, oh yeah, we've got plenty of fish, you know, we're doing this. So we've bought this site of glass out, but we're not going to do anything with it. Wakefield, we're talking to the council. We're waiting to hear back from the council. They're just taking them for a rad, you know. What do they actually bring to Super League, either of them? Hopeless. Then you look at Featherstone, who get lambasted all the time. Nobody seems to like them. Nobody wanted them to come up. Admittingly, I didn't want them to come up either because I want to lose in the French game. But I tell you what they've done to Post Office Road on a fraction of the budgets of the Cass and Wakefield. They've shown them up, haven't they? They've made them look bloody stupid. Best ground in the Wakefield postcode area. They're not even in Super League, but them two are. And then you've got Salford having to swap grounds. And I'll tell you what, this is the thing, because people are saying, how can a 5,000 capacity stadium be a Super League thing? Well, until Cass and Wakey pull the finger out, I ain't got a problem with it. I'm looking at it as an away fan going to Salford. I don't really care, because it's a ground tick for me. And, you know, ultimately, it won't stop me watching all, will it? Because we'll take 1,000 there, they'll have 2.5, 3, their ground will be nearly sold out, you know, roughly. That's another thing. It'll create demand for a start. If they have the potential to grow there, they sell. You know, they can start selling out the ground. You create supply and demand, innit? Basic economics. But yeah, they've just been done the dirty a little bit, Salford. I sort of feel a little bit sorry for them. Ironically, if they stayed at the Willows, you know, the historical home, everyone knew it. But yeah, they went along with a lot of false promises, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, you know, and unfortunately, taking the RFL at their or Super League at their face value can really test your patience, guy. And we did exactly the same thing. It was only us and Wakefield that took them at face value and bought enough players to bloody run a reserve grade. No one else did, and we arguably paid for that season and the season after, because our cap was unbalanced, because we went out and signed, you know, the likes of Levi and Zongu and bloody
Daddy Lantry.
Danny Lantry, for God's sake. You know?
It'd be interesting to see if that hadn't come out, those six players that we did sign that were for the reserve grade, would we have signed a big forward? Would we have signed a hooker? Would we have, you know, a big name to really come in and bolster that squad and make us better? And it'd be interesting. Obviously, we'll never know the answer to that. But that's rugby league in a nutshell, isn't it? It's amateur hour at times. It really is.
It is.
That's the thing. We've announced now that Super League 2022 will go ahead in February next year. I think it's still going to be the same structure, obviously 12 teams, top six playoff, but then there's all this talk about changing it again in 2023 and some of the proposals. I mean, we touched on this last week, but a league of 10 or whatever they want to bring in now, and changes all the time. I just don't see it working. And
rubbish. At a time when the NRL is expanding to 17 teams and then with the promise of an 18th team in 2 years, if we go down to 10 teams, what a bloody signal.
Well, we all know why that is, don't we?
Yeah.
10 teams, bigger cut of the pie. It's like the away fans argument, isn't it? It's embarrassing.
That's disgusting.
It is. Yeah. The away fans thing is an absolute joke. I mean, we had a rant about that last week. If you're on an away fan, so you shouldn't be in Soul Play.
Yeah, you've got the wrong business plan.
Absolutely. But to cut it down to 10 teams, basically, because you run the shop and you know that you can get a bigger slice of the pie, is embarrassing. I mean, we should be, like you say, doing what the NRL doing and expanding to 14 teams. And you're not telling me that we've got 12 sides that are now, and look what's in the Championship and the potential with some of them sides. You know, look at London. Yeah. Again, they've just announced one of their players. Exactly, one of them's just signed for a Soul Play club, Wakefield.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce his name, Sadiq Adebayi, something like that. But yeah, another one that's made the step up. So you're not telling me that the production line isn't there in London, because it is. You know, it frustrates the hell out of me, it really does. But yeah, the Super League future, yeah, who knows what will happen. It'll probably change again end of next year. Then in 3 years' time, it'll change again. 3 years' time after that, it'll change again. And we're just in this constant cycle, aren't we? And we wonder why I never get anywhere. But yeah, for all next year, I suppose, obviously, we'll come round to this when we start the podcast again in January. But I just want a top six finish is what we want as an absolute minimum. Anything beyond that, I'll take it when it comes. But I'll tell you what, we've got to be a top six side. You know, we've made some adjustments, as I say. We've let Mai Hifniewa go. Obviously, our thoughts were on the podcast on that last week. You know, we've signed Lovajua. There's rumours that we're going to get a prop in. We've re-signed the right people about the problems. We've brought in Michael Shenton. Signed, obviously, Daniel McIntosh. You know, everything. There's been a lot of boxes ticked there, definitely. And I'm looking at Hull SC next year thinking, well, we can't get any worse. Surely the only way is up.
You look at that and you think, well, straight away we're faster.
Yeah.
You know, because if Fanua's not there and Farimo aren't there, who weren't the speediest of wingers, you replace them with Swift and Daniel McIntosh, and straight away we're faster. You've got a fit Connor, a fit Reynolds, a fit Shaw, even, you know, coming off the bench. It gives us more speed. You know, just we can't be any worse than this year. Minimum top six. Should be aiming top three, top four. And we've got to improve. Simple as. Especially because, you know, we'll improve, but everyone else will improve as well.
Well, that's the thing.
Catalans will be hungry. Yeah. Catalans will be hungry next year for not getting it this year. Saints will want to go four times. Wigan have had a terrible season. They'll want to get better.
Warrington.
Warrington have signed some good players. Rovers will want to keep their growth.
And then there's Cass.
With a great new fullback. Cass, you know, everyone's going to get better. We can't afford to stand still.
No, that's what I'm saying. If we get in the top six, even if it's sixth position, great. Anything beyond that, brilliant. It's got to be the minimum expectation. Get in that six, and once we've embedded ourselves into that six, then we'll talk about the stuff beyond that. But yeah, that would be refreshing as well for an owner not to come out and say, oh yeah, I want silverware this year. Because it does us no favours. To be fair to him, he's followed through with his word so far. He's got rid of a big personality, you know, a player that's done some incredible things previously at Hull FC, but who was obviously not performing now, and that took some balls. It's all right saying it, but doing it's another thing, and it took some balls to get rid of him. So I will give Adam Pearson some credit there, as we did last week. But I don't want him to come out and say, oh yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. You know, Brett Hodgson was very tight-lipped on it, and that's the way to go. If Hull FC want to come out and say, oh, we want to be a playoff side, perfect, because that's what we need to be next year. Just come out and say that. Don't say, oh yeah, we've spent this, we've spent that, we want to be grand final, blah blah blah. It really doesn't do us any favours. But if you just come out and say, oh yeah, top six, brilliant. Let's see where it goes from there. You know, you're in the playoffs, anything can happen, can't it? So,
you know what, though, mate? That's all Pearson saying, that kind of stuff. Hodgson said none of that.
Yeah, true.
You know, has Hodgson said anything about Fanua going? No. Nothing.
Full of class, isn't he? He really is.
Full of class, mate. He really is. He's a good coach. We just need to get the players that are going to buy into what he wants to do.
We'll
get them.
Yeah. We will get them, and it's also getting rid of those who don't want to buy into what he does. And this is the thing, Hodgson gets the year next year, that goes without you saying, absolutely. And hopefully we'd like to think that we'll win the podcast next year and we're going to be talking about progression under Brett Hodgson, and we're going to be talking about Hull FC as a playoff side. And if we've done that, then we're going in the right direction. And let's not forget, let's up until the end of June, we were going in the right
yeah,
direction.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's hope we can say it in July and August next year rather than just at the end of June.
September as well. You know, recent history there makes you shudder. It really does. But yeah, that's going to be the expectations to start with next year, absolutely. And we'll hope we can fulfil those. And say thanks to all our listeners for tuning in this year. We do appreciate it. We had some great feedback, obviously. You know, we've been complimentary, we've been critical, we made one or two mistakes, you know, we're not perfect, but overall, you know, it's been pretty successful. And the feedback, what I love about it is when I'm selling up the cream at matches, I get so much feedback from it as well. So, you know, you're tuning in every week, whether I'm driving to work or,
nice.
You know, on the commute. So it's nice to get that. Obviously, you get those that, you know, don't like it. And you're going to get that anywhere, though. There's people that don't like the fanzine, there's people that love it. You know, Hull FC's fan base is massive. You're not going to please everyone. I can live with that. But yeah, the feedback overall has been pretty good, and yeah, appreciate obviously you for coming on. Oh yeah, mate, it's much appreciated.
Appreciate the opportunity, mate, and you know, you're always going to get me on my pet subject, which is rugby league and LFC in particular. So, mate, I'll always whatever I say, I'll believe. I'll never kind of shy away from if I've got a point of view that I don't think is palatable to the rest of the supporters, I'll say it because that's how I believe, you know. So I appreciate you giving me the forum to do it, mate.
No worries, mate. And as always, come on, you all.